This show is sponsored by Qualitest. Deploy software that you and your customers trust with Qualitest Testing and Business Assurance Services. Learn more about Qualitest at qualitestgroup.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Testing Show. I'm Michael Larson, your show producer, and today we have our standard guests. Let's welcome back Kirzi Ababa.
Good morning, everyone.
Jessica Ingrassolino.
Hey there.
Matt Heuser.
Good to be here.
And for a definite throwback to early days of the show, let's welcome back Brian Van Stone.
Hey, guys. It has been a while, hasn't it?
Yes. So one of the neat things here is that when we recorded the pilot episode in the first couple of episodes, Brian was on to help us get our sea legs, and we've gone on to talk to a lot of other people, but we're coming back to Brian. More to the point, I'm going to get out of the way so that Matt can continue doing what he does, which is moderate the show. Matt, over to you.
Hey, thanks. Welcome, everybody. Even if you're a longtime listener, you might not know Brian well. Brian is actually a solutions architect with Qualitest, the sponsors of the show. Been a while. What have you been up to, Brian?
Oh, you know, all work, no play. No, just kidding. It's been fun. We've got lots of stuff going on with lots of technologies. Selenium, not the least among them, which I guess we'll get to a little bit today. Just trying to figure out how we can apply more technology to do more awesome things every day.
Well, I don't know if you want it on the show, but you're going to be a dad again, right?
That is true. I have another one coming. June 23rd is the due date, so it's creeping up. I better get ready.
Well, we're happy for you. We'll keep a light on for you when you come back. The first thing I want to talk about for news, besides the new baby, is all of the investments that are happening in the test tool space right now. For example, last year, Zephyr raised $31 million Series C round of investment. Zephyr is a test management company. Test case management. You create test cases in your tool, and they also have some neat integrations to different automation and reporting, so you can see one report between both your tooling and your humans running test cases. QA Symphony just raised $40 million in a similar round of investment. Tricentis just raised $165 million in a similar round of investment. And Sauce Labs just raised $70 million. And by the time this recording is out, they're going to have done their first conference, the first SauceCon. Usually when a company raises money, I say there's no story there. So what? Another company raises millions of dollars. But these are all in the test tool space in a reasonably close period of time. But I wanted to throw it out to our guests. I'll start with Michael, as he is in Silicon Valley, the land of the big venture capital firms, and might have a better feel for what's going on. How do you interpret all these investments, Michael?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that because of the way that software, at least now, is being developed and the fact that there is a lot of investment in cloud architecture, there's a lot of investment in continuous integration, continuous delivery, continuous testing, deployment. Your favorite fill-in-the-blank continuous, I guess. The idea is that you want to be able to have infrastructure that you can pull up and break down as you need it and not have to rely on that infrastructure being in your building. So this is just a continuation of that. These plays have been around for a long time. We're familiar with them. I think what we're seeing, though, is that more and more companies are actually seeing the benefit of having this pool of resources that they can use when they need them and not use them when they don't. Just as an example, Sauce Labs, in addition to just being able to have your machines run up and use a bunch of them, you can also do straight up exploring. You can create machines anytime you want to with an operating system and a browser, and you can test on just about anything. And when you're done, you destroy it and it goes away. Just that benefit alone, I think, is where a lot of venture capitalists are seeing benefits, in the sense that there's money to be made and people are willing to say, we don't want to shoulder the machine investment any longer. We want to be as lean as possible and as quick as possible. And just the way that agile development has now become much more commonplace, there's a lot of space for pools for being able to use these type of tools, especially in a cloud environment. At least that's what I think is happening here and why I think a lot of people are paying more attention to it.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely part of it. I wonder if the fear would be that there's just too much money swimming around venture capital circles and there's good money chasing after bad ideas. I don't think that's the case here. The dollar amounts are huge, though. I remember when social texts would get $5 million in financing. I think the total VC investment over the life that I was at that company and before I even came was maybe $25 million. These numbers are just huge. So I'm hoping they do something really good with that money.
I'm a little curious because a lot of these companies, they've been around for a while. If we look at the way the money has flowed for Sauce, for example, this $70 million is more than they've gotten in the past 4 or 5 years. And they've been well established as kind of a global leader in the cloud Selenium grid space for a while now. And that's nothing new to us. So I'm wondering, as much as the continuous X argument behind this makes so much sense to me, some little part of me wonders if there's some other discrete event that's making some more of this money move around. Might require a little more research.
Yeah, $165 million for Tricentis seems like a lot. Now, what I would say is for what I expect them to do with that, I want them to put it in product development and then tie in to CI natively better and tie in to version control natively better and tie in to something like AWS. So the tool will do more than push testing through it, but you've actually got connectors so that developing a whole CD pipeline is easy, which right now it isn't. It's kind of like this weird, bizarre black art that you hire some expert to do because it's super hard. So I'm hoping the tools advance in that way. And I should say that the companies I listed have been clients of Exelon at one time or another. We've done work with them, whether that's R&D or marketing or research or writing. And I think that that's whatever you could call it, a conflict of interest. It's worth disclosing if you're listening. But it allows us to fund the sorts of research and thought experiments that I think do end up helping the community, just like this podcast. So QualiTest is a Sauce Labs partner. That's worth disclosing, too. Lots of good stuff going on. To speak to Brian's point, Sauce Labs, from what I can tell, is already break even. They're already making money. So this investment should allow them to put more into R&D, I would think, to build better solutions faster, because I think they're already there. This should just be putting the accelerator down.
Yeah, I think what we may actually see as a side effect with the money flowing into Sauce is more investment into Appium as a tool, which, as much as I love Appium, it could use a little investing. It's not quite where Selenium is, so I'm hoping to see some better capabilities in the mobile space as a result.
As you can see, that's actually starting now. I mean, earlier this year, Sauce Labs has announced that they acquired a company called TestObject, which is sort of the equivalent of Selenium. I don't know, but real devices, but it's on the cloud. You're shifting really from the browser space into the mobile space. And they do have an existing solution for that right now, where they have native emulators that you can spin up and tear down and run tests. But the challenges that I've seen personally when it comes to native emulation solutions is that it is an emulator. We have libraries now that require a dedicated GPU, for example. If you use WebGL or if you use OpenGL, for example, that requires a dedicated GPU processor, and none of those will be testable, or at least you won't be able to interact with that particular system. With real devices on the cloud, that is something that they have a solution for, you know, moving forward. The other thing that I'm also seeing is that in the evolution of any of the products that you're dealing with, you start with the genesis of the product, you shift into something that's custom built, then you turn it into a rental product, and then finally it becomes a utility. So you see the amount of work that people do to get their systems up to speed to be able to use that product gets cheaper as it moves from genesis towards a commodity space. So I believe a lot of these tools right now, majority of them are still in between custom built as well as product and rental. The value that I've seen, I've worked with Sauce Labs since 2009. I still work with Sauce Labs now, and I guess that's going to be my disclosure. I'm actually part of the Sauce Labs customer advisory board. I have the chance and the ability to be able to talk to other customers within Sauce Labs and learn and glean on the solutions that they built. But when you jump between a custom-built product as well as into the rental space, things do get a lot easier. And it's not just that, but we also can glean into the analytics of what is going on with our tests. You know, what is the primary cause of failures? Is it on our side? Is it on their side? All of this data is now available to you, when before you have to create a completely custom solution for you to do that. And that's all something that you as a company have to pay for. So either that's one or two people so that you can get to that level of analytics or information that you want to get out of the tests that you're performing. But all of that is provided for you by Sauce Labs, or probably even with these other companies now.
Eventually, this will get to a realistic expectation of what this technology can deliver and for who, and then we'll be on to the next thing. Welcome to software. Speaking of a realistic expectation of what this technology can do for you, QualiTest has been talking about Selenium this month, which is an open source, probably needs to be programmed tool for driving a browser and checking the values that it finds. Maybe Brian should tell us about some of the successes and not so much successes that he's had using Selenium.
Ugh, I've had a complicated relationship with Selenium over the years. No, I'm just kidding. Selenium's been pretty good for us, all things considered. When it comes to driving web browsers, for the automated tester mindset, it's one of the cleanest and most intuitive tools to use. It doesn't come with a lot of bells and whistles. And like you said, there's programming activity that needs to take place. We don't want to lie about any of that. You need to write some code when you're going to work with Selenium if you want to be successful with it. And that's just kind of a fact of the tool. I think what kind of sets it apart from a lot of the other things in the test automation world is that you don't have all those bells and whistles. You don't have built-in reporting and integrations to all the other tools in your suite, like your release engineering and build automation platforms and things like that. You've got to build some of that out yourself. But at the end of the day, when you just want a nice, clean API for driving web browsers to automate your web apps, it's exactly what you need and nothing more. And in a lot of ways, that's what I really love about Selenium. That being said, more recently, I don't know if you guys have been following all the changes to the Firefox browser of late. They've really been cracking down on a lot of their security implementations and things like that. There's also been some problems with Selenium compatibility with Firefox, just so that we're not painting too pretty of a picture. There have been struggles along the way too, but all things considered, we've had great success with Selenium and QualiTest. Most of the time that comes by way of us building automation frameworks around it, because when you work with Selenium, you need to be ready to supplement some of that extra functionality that you don't get. You know, you want to integrate with your test management tools. A lot of it's device integrations, but not all of it is device integrations. You want good reporting, you want good logging. A lot of that, you've got to be ready to put in place. But once you get there, you end up in a pretty happy zone.
I can definitely account to that. We have been using Selenium for, well, I think honestly, probably close to the entire time that SocialText has been a company. Actually, that's not entirely true. But as long as I've been there, we've had a very solid and robust suite of hundreds, and I guess you could even say thousands of Selenium tests that allow us to do our continuous integration pipeline and testing that we do. And every story has tests that we update and that we modify. We are currently running on a slightly older version of Selenium because of exactly what you said. Selenium provides a great API. It provides an option to run and drive browsers, but to get it to do other things and to get it to do them effectively to integrate with your product, you do have to code. You do have to write your own extensions or other additional pieces to it. And we've done that extensively. And there are benefits to that. But at the same time, there is a challenge in the sense that when new features come out, there's a lag into when you're going to be able to use them, because either you have to throw a lot of stuff out and retool, or you have to write up a bunch of stuff to be able to utilize the new features.
In some ways, though, with Selenium, you kind of have the freedom to implement the way you want. When you go to some of the other test tools on the market, you're kind of forced into the paradigm of test automation that is dictated by the tool. But Selenium being just kind of an API to drive browsers allows you to decide what paradigm you want to live in once you get on top of that tool. Because a lot of the struggles that we see with some of our clients is they want to be more continuous, they want more test automation artifacts, but maybe they don't necessarily have all the skills in their QA organization to be writing code and producing these kind of tests. Well, then, you know, you have the opportunity to sit back and say, okay, what kind of design approach do I want to take to my test automation around Selenium? Do I need to enable business users to be able to get involved in this automation, or is it all developers that are redoing it? What kind of skills do I have available, and how can I put a solution in place that allows me to best utilize the expertise that I already have in my organization? To go along with the kind of native complexity that you get from something that requires those lower level skills, you also get a lot of flexibility around what kind of solution you can deliver at the end of the day.
Let's get into specifics for just a couple of minutes. So if your audience hasn't used Selenium before, right? It's a code library. So in any object-oriented language, you say, hey, give me a new browser. Hey, browser, point yourself to www.amazon.com. Hey, browser, there should be a text box there called thing to search for, right? Hey, browser, there should be a button called search, right? Hey, browser, type in lessons learned in software testing into the thing to search for and then click the button. Hey, browser, there's a book called Lessons Learned in Software Testing. It's a link. It should be appear on the screen now, right? Every time I said right is an assert. You're probably going to use it with some other framework that can do something with that assert, like send it to Visual Studio or send it to Jenkins or send it to the command line or keep it in memory. And then when you're done, I passed 50 out of 60 checks. And then here are the ones that failed. And the beauty of that is whether you're writing C Sharp or Ruby or Python, or I think the Perl bindings don't work anymore, but at one point Perl worked pretty well with Selenium. What other popular languages? Java.
And JavaScript as well.
JavaScript, Node, whatever. And typically what people do is they try to pick the similar language to what their production programmers are using. Not everybody does that, because Ruby can, if you're coding in C++, you shouldn't be writing web apps in C++. But if you were, that's a very verbose, even Java is a verbose, long, lots of words, lots of keywords, void, public, static, blah, 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 protected, blah, blah. And in Ruby, you might just say, give me the object, do the things, put it to the console, and then have Jenkins call it. So there's two common patterns. One is to use whatever your production programming language is. Another one is to use a super high-level, powerful language, scripting language. Now, they do tend to drive a browser, so you can actually see the browser pop up and you can watch it. When I was at Social Text, we had an app called Slideshow that would run where the console would say everything was happening, would fly by, and then you would actually watch it as a human to look for errors. There are other tools, Apply Tools is one of them, that can take screen captures and do automatic diffs for you. That's sort of an advanced topic. The extreme opposite of that, if you use Sauce, you can have a video, which you only watch if it fails, or you can run it headless, where there is no screen. Everything is happening in memory, and it's all generated, but it's not actually being pushed to your screen, which makes it go a lot faster. And headless is just, I don't know how much faster, 4 or 5 times faster when I was using it for headless Firefox. And I understand there is now a headless Chrome that has come out. Has anybody used that yet?
I haven't, no. But in the past, I've done a little bit with Phantom.js, which is designed exclusively to be kind of like a headless, lightweight JS implementation.
Right.
So that one's really quick, too.
Michael, you haven't used headless Chrome?
Not as of yet, no. Most of the bindings that we have, you were talking earlier about the Perl bindings, and I would say that up until recently, the person who was most responsible for that Perl binding worked at Social Text. Does not anymore. Yeah. And so that's one of the things that's getting us to look at how we can update and modernize our implementation. And part of it probably will mean that, like you said, even though a lot of our previous implementation was done in Perl, some of our future stuff is going to be done in something else.
Now, Jess has done a lot of REST API testing, at least trying to remember. That's what you were doing at Bitly, right?
We were doing some through Selenium. Largely, though, we would try to be verifying different things that would happen as we shortened a link and making sure that we were getting the responses back that we expected and that sort of thing.
Every now and again, I'll get asked, can you use Selenium for REST API testing? You could, but if you've got plain text going across a wire, why not just grab that plain text, use something like curl and get the response and then put in a string and then just parse it and figure out whether it's right or not. Selenium's just going to slow you down, I think, in that case.
To me, in the tooling and all the companies I've worked at, I've used Selenium, except my first, where I didn't know how to write code. So, and I think that the value proposition that I've seen from it is an ability to, I like watching the tests, actually watching the browser screen, and my ability to match up what's happening on the screen with the code or the test that I'm watching in my terminal. And if I have a log window open at the same time, I like monitors, so I use a lot of those. using those different tool sets all at the same time, I can quickly figure out if there's an error happening in my test. Oh, I can see that it's happening because, oh, the element's on the screen, but Selenium says it's not finding it. So how do I fix my test? Because I know it's a test error because that element is showing for the user. I think I used it a little differently than most people do. I definitely used it for the general purposes of running it against a CI system, running it on deploys and that kind of thing. But I've also used it as an accompaniment to exploratory testing or to regression testing in terms of actually watching the browser so I can kind of see how things are behaving over time.
Matt has previously mentioned this. He talked about a little feature, which is actually a series of tests that we put together called Slideshow. And the benefit to Slideshow is exactly that. It's meant to be watched. But one of the things that I found of value with the Slideshow implementation that we used at Social Text and still use at Social Text is, what if we used a different metaphor? Instead of saying we have a train that we can order the cars any way we want to, but we're still going from point A to point B, what if we used our automation as a taxi cab instead? And I think that's also where we're getting with a lot of the investments in automation for, you know, as we to tie back into our news segment earlier, is the idea that if we can set up our automation as a taxi cab, one of the nice things about using Selenium and driving the browser and getting into work is that you can get into the nooks and crannies of your application over an extended period of time. And by doing that, you can actually look at state conditions that you manually are, it's going to be too long-winded for you, or you're going to feel like, ugh, really, I don't want to have to do all of this. I've already got all the steps set up. Let's go through all of these iterations so that when I get to, after loading 15,000 users and after doing some verification with those users, now I want to go take a look at something and, oh, hey, that looks interesting. What just happened there? Pause test. And now you've got your browser open and you can go poke around with a whole lot of stuff that's been manipulated on your system and some interesting state changes that you might not, frankly, get to unless you've spent a lot of time setting up and exploring manually. And there are benefits to being able to explore, but to explore, first off, sometimes you need a good guide.
Leaning on what everyone else has said before, Selenium is just a tool that can control a browser. If you want it to do other things, then you have to programmatically include a ton of other modules or libraries that's available out there so that it can perform more stuff. I think the key that I've been hearing from everyone is that, look, you have a tool, you can pretty much build the framework on top of that tool that can perform the things that you want it to perform. You do require skill, the processes around it. So how do we look at this tool so that it's still easily maintainable? So one of the things that we did was really looking at a more comprehensive way to be able to use Selenium as a tool because of the problems that we had. Not everybody has the skill set to be able to write code. So you have to look for people who can actually do that, or you can hire some developers to maintain that for you. And you can just lean on your existing testing team to be able to perform the actual testing and write some automation and plug that through a continuous delivery pipeline. If you have a framework that's easy to install and you can write tests pretty straightforwardly, or you have custom flows or setting some weird values on your browser session IDs or your cookies or stuff like that, where you have to write very specific code and how to get that done. If that's taken care of, then your testers can just go ahead and write these tests themselves, because as soon as we introduce a new feature, we can just ask a software development engineer and test to create an equivalent step so that you can write a corresponding automation script within your tests. You know, reporting's not that good. It doesn't come out of the bat. So there's a ton of frameworks out there that you can use so that you can easily ingest the results and then look at the differences in the failures, and you can introduce logic on how to deal with those failures. Success that I've really seen where we're able to use Selenium effectively is mainly because we understood where we're going to be able to use it for. And we've established those limits. And if those limits are challenged, like for example, if you use Sauce Labs, it has a feature called SAS Connect, which gives you the ability to set up a reverse proxy between SAS Labs infrastructure as well as behind your firewall. That gives you the ability to test internal projects without compromising your security, without opening your test to the public. I think it's small things like these that help you with, you know, how to use the tool more effectively. And I think for the folks who's been using it for a long time, they do have a lot of war stories. And I do enjoy listening to Michael about this when he talks about the challenges, especially because you're dealing with a custom binding. And the moment the binding support is gone, it gets more difficult to maintain your test as well. So that's where the language conversation on where can we pivot, like what is the scripting language that we're going to be using moving forward and how are we going to transition to that? But for me, the story that I really have for Selenium, it's been a very effective tool, mainly because I've been working in the web space, and that's a majority of the things I'm doing. Now we're slowly shifting into native applications, and you have Appium, which uses the same JSONwire protocol as the existing Selenium API. It's quite an easy switch from a test writing perspective, but the whole test setup around it kind of changes because it's no longer just a browser that, you know, you have to deal with. You're dealing with permissions on your native device, your permissions on your local machine, et cetera, et cetera. For me, as an encouragement to those who are struggling, there's a lot of help that you can get out there. There's a lot of knowledge that you can glean in, especially on Stack Exchange, if you want to look into how to simplify, how to make things more maintainable and scalable as you perform more tests.
Yeah, Appium is a whole different beast in terms of configuring and setting it up because it's just designed to make your mobile devices feel like as easy as running a browser. It's not. So hopefully these new rounds of investments are going to help SAS continue to develop that, make it easier, which is going to drive adoption. The easier these things are to use, the more people are going to use them. So it's a virtuous circle. And with that, we're getting tight on time. So before we go, this podcast is going to be coming out in June. Is there anything folks are doing that's new and exciting? Anything you've talked about? I've got an article on, I went to the Agile Alliance Technical Conference April, and then I went to Agile and Beyond in May. I've got two articles on that. We'll put that in the show note. Anybody else have anything new and exciting they want to talk about?
Well, I think it's probably appropriate to throw out that Qualitest is going to be hosting a webinar June 28th, which is actually going to be focused on utilizing page object model design patterns with Selenium to solve some of the more common automation challenges and tricky objects that you run into in web applications. So if anybody's interested, definitely look for the materials and announcements around that. So yeah, June 28th, look for a webinar from Qualitest.
Great. We'll put a link in the show notes if we can. Anybody else? Last call.
I just wanted to shout out to the NYC Testers organization. And Jess is actually part of that. The reason why I want to bring this up was in our last meetup a couple of weeks ago, one of the participants said hi to me and wanted me to extend greetings to everyone in the show because she is an avid listener to our podcast. So Shireen Bashar, wherever you are, thank you for listening and we hope you continue listening.
Thank you again. Yeah. That's fantastic. Woo! Yay! Also, we want to definitely make a point that if you have questions, comments, concerns, or frankly, if you just say, I'd love to be on the show, we encourage you to contact us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer your questions. We will be more than happy to encourage you. If you want to be on the podcast, if you have something you want to say, let us know, and we want to be able to include you in the conversation.
Yeah, the testing world suddenly just got a whole lot more interesting with some of these major announcements. So we'll see what the next 6 months will bring. And we will cover it here live. Hope you enjoy listening to us on your commute or at work or in the gym. Thanks for coming, everybody. And we'll see you again in 2 more weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Testing Show, sponsored by Qualitest. For more information, please see www.qualitestgroup.com. Do you have questions? Or is there a topic or an idea you'd like to have covered? Please email us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer questions we receive on air.